Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Captiva Live Radio, a weekly show brought to you by Captiva Foundation, a Texas nonprofit, nonpartisan information and intelligence network for citizen engagement and political participation. My name is Felipe Wicochea, and today we're going to talk about a couple of subjects. There's elections going on, the primary election season. We're going to talk about a very tragic incident that happened a few days ago here in Addison, where a young man lost his life in the hands of an off-duty police officer. We're going to take some calls from the audience to hear from the friends and family their thoughts about the whole incident. We also have a conversation with a young man from California, Ramon Barajas III, who's running for U.S. Congress. So we're going to have the conversation with him. So we jump right into our first topic, which is the primary election. Today, March 22nd, Arizona, Idaho, and Utah are conducting their primary process. In the case of Idaho, it's a caucus only for Democrats. Arizona and Utah, both Democrats and Republicans, are going to pick their candidates. In these states, they're really important, especially for Latinos. Arizona, it's a crucial state. It's where the campaign trail moves to towards the west, approaching California. So it's going to be very interesting to see, especially since Bernie Sanders' campaign has put a lot of their resources, manpower, and hours in Arizona. Utah, it's controversial. The Governor Mitt Romney, whose home state is Utah, has been engaging in arguments with Donald Trump, supporting John Kasich first, now supporting Ted Cruz for the primary in Utah. So a lot of especially Latter-day Saints church members in Utah are really upset with how Trump has conducted his campaign. So it's going to be interesting to see where all that vote it's going to. In terms of delegates, we're going to give the rundown of the delegate count as of today. The results are going to start coming a little later. The polls are still open, so it's going to be until later tonight that we know the results for these primaries. As of today, on the Democratic Party, Hillary Clinton is leading with 1,630 delegates, then Bernie Sanders with 870 delegates. For Democrats, there are still 2,265 delegates to be remaining to be assigned. And for whoever gets the nomination, they need to go to the Democratic National Convention with at least 2,383 delegates. That's what it's required. There's still a long way to go. The remaining delegates are 2,200, a little above of 2,200, and the delegates needed are 2,300. So it's still very early in the race, although there are a lot of voices asking Bernie Sanders to suspend his campaign, to join forces with Hillary Clinton. But in my opinion, that's a bad idea, not only for Bernie Sanders, but for the whole Democratic Party. They need the energy. They need to take this all the way to the convention. because it's a movement, and Bernie Sanders has made a lot of emphasis in a movement, and only it's going to be able to be fully integrated to the Democratic vote in November if he continues the race to the end. And also, the more delegates, the more votes Bernie Sanders gets, the more Hillary Clinton is going to be forced to at least embrace some of the proposals that have pushed Bernie Sanders this far into the race. If you remember, when he first announced, it was like an impossible candidate. They have been calling him unelectable numerous times. Even recently, they have been calling Bernie Sanders unelectable, but the numbers are showing that he can get the vote out, that he's energizing especially young voters, minorities. A lot of Latinos are supporting Bernie Sanders, so we'll see. The candidate that no one talks about, and he's still in the race, it's Roque de la Fuente. Roque is a businessman from California. He's running for president in the Democratic Party. He has been in more than 40 state ballots. So there's a Latino in the race, and that's something to be considered. It's something that we have been discussing a lot with candidates in terms of how can we increase the level of participation of Latinos, not only in public office, but within the Democratic Party. Personally, I think it's really sad when the Democratic Party wants the Latino vote but rejects and simply ignores Latino candidates like Roque, who's running on a very solid platform. He's very serious about the race, but he was not included in any of the debates and pretty much has been marginalized in all the political process. That's something that we're going to discuss after the election. We're going to plan. We have been reaching out. Activa Foundation has been reaching out to a lot of leaders, a lot of people involved in the political process to see how we're going to make sure that for future elections, the Latino candidates have their place in the Democratic Party. Now we jump on the Republican side. We have Donald Trump leading the charge with 681 delegates, followed by Ted Cruz with 425, then Marco Rubio with 166, and John Kasich with 143 delegates. Now, Marco Rubio, unlike other candidates, he didn't withdraw from the race. He just suspended his campaign, which means that the delegates that he won that were pledged to vote for him are still committed to vote for him, even though he's not campaigning anymore. And that's basically a political move in order to prevent those delegates from being pulled to any other candidate. For the Republican nomination, there's 1,042 delegates remaining. And whoever wins the nomination before the convention would require 1,237 delegates. Now, for the convention, the Republican National Convention, there's a lot of talk about whether it's going to be an open convention, which means that in the first round, no candidate will have the required number of delegates, which, I repeat, is 1,237. So, once the first round of votes is over and no one gets the required delegates, then they vote again. And the delegates that were pledged to any given candidate are free to change the way they vote. And that's how apparently the Republican leadership is planning to handle the convention. It's going to be a very difficult process. There's high stakes in this process because we're not talking only about the Republican losing the possibility of getting a Republican president, but also there's two-thirds of the Congress are Now, the congressional seats are up for grabs. There's Senate races, so there's a lot of at stake on this election on the Republican side. Well, that's about it about regarding elections and national politics. Now we're going to go to our conversation with Ramon Barajas. He's, as I said, he's running for U.S. Congress in the California area. So here's our conversation with Ramon Barajas.
Thank you for being with us this afternoon. I'm very pleased to announce that we have with us Mr. Ramon Barajas III. He's running for Congress in California, U.S. 27th District. Ramon is a known student leader, entrepreneur, educator, innovator, philanthropist, multi-artist, and humanitarian. At his very young age of 25, he's the youngest candidate to fight to represent his generation in office today. He was born in L.A. In an immigrant family. He identifies with the working class and the youth and believes in giving a voice to those who need to be heard and want to represent the California 27th District, which covers most of the Pasadena area. Welcome to Hactiva Radio, Ramon. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I want to talk to you about the motivation. What moves you? The purpose of this conversation is to figure out what's in your head when you decide to take this huge step and run for U.S. Congress. So tell me, is this your first experience seeking public office?
That is correct.
Okay, and why Congress?
Congress, why Congress? Simply, it is where change is made.
Okay, can you explain for our listeners of the particular office that you're seeking, which is U.S. Congress, what's the impact in our everyday lives? What's the influence of that body of government in our everyday lives?
Sure thing. Well, when it comes to Congress and how it affects the everyday life, it is how Congress makes the laws that affect everyday lives. Laws get passed every day and approved, and it affects each and every single one in every household. So it is a very important part of the government.
Okay. And let's jump a little bit into your motivations. Do you remember when, I mean, you're young, you're 24, right? 25?
I'm 25.
25,
yeah.
So you're rather young. So do you remember when you first registered to vote?
Yes, I do. I was at the age of 18.
Okay, so right after you were eligible, you decided to register. Do you remember
Correct.
What motivated you to register?
The need for change and representational for millennials.
Okay. Okay, do you remember your first voting experience?
Yes, I do. It was actually in 2008 for the presidential election.
Okay. Do you remember how you felt when you cast your first ballot?
Yes, I do, actually. It was both nerve-wracking, but at the same time, I felt proud that I was making a change. I was exercising my right to make a difference.
Okay. Sounds good. And in terms of how you got to that point of voting for the first time, was politics a common subject at the dinner table when you were growing up?
Yes, it was, actually. Politics has been involved, been in my family for quite a number of years. It is what influenced me to be a candidate for public office.
Okay. And speaking of the family environment and how Latinos get involved at a very young age in politics, you represent a generation that it's like kind of a holy grail for every single candidate. They're looking the millennial vote. And I insist you're very young, but if you had a teenager at home or a younger brother in your case, How do you encourage them to get registered, to take a stand, participate, and go to the polls to express their opinion? What would you tell them? What's your message for the young millennials who are, like, in defense? They realize that the in general, the situation demands our participation, but they're like in defense, not quite sure of whether there's any value in their vote. What would you tell them?
Well, my message is simple. The time for change is now. As of now, the Latino, the young Latino population here in California is on the majority side, which is a very powerful voice.
Okay, and in terms of the Latino community being a majority in California, and it's a trend that it's going to catch up nationwide, given the current estimation of the U.S. Census Bureau by 2040, what would we, the Latino community, should be doing as a whole to increase the level of civic engagement and participation?
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
Given the fact that in California right now we're Latino youth is a majority, and that's a trend that it's going to catch up nationwide in the next 20 years. By 2040, Latinos would be the biggest majority, and there's going to be a shift in the population in this country. What do we as Latinos, as a community, should be doing right now to increase the level of participation of our community in politics?
Well, that's a very simple answer. Get organized, register to vote.
Okay. Now, I appreciate you taking your time. I know running for Congress demands a lot of time, and I appreciate you joining us. Where can our listeners go and learn more about your campaign?
They can visit my website at www.barajas.us.
Perfect. And any final thoughts you want to share with our audience?
I just can't stress the importance enough for the need to register to vote and make that difference that you want to see. Be that change you want to make.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, you heard Ramon. Go and register to vote on our Hactiva website. We have a tool where you can register to vote. You can fill out the form and get registered. So it's very important, register to vote. Thank you very much, Ramon, and good luck with your race.
Well, that was our conversation. Now we're going to take our live call. Hello, you're live on Hactiva Radio. Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from? Hello, can you tell us you're live on radio? Okay, apparently we lost that call. Well, we're going to talk about Jose Cruz, and it was a very unfortunate incident on Sunday, March 13. Jose Cruz, 16 years old, and his companion, Edgar Rodriguez, were assaulted by a police officer after an altercation, according to the initial statement of the police off-duty police officer. The teenagers were trying to break into a car in an apartment complex where he lives. So after a brief initial altercation, the kids, the teenagers drove off. The police officer jumped in his personal vehicle and started chasing them half a mile away from the initial contact. The officer, it seems, that rammed the car in the back. The kids lost control, and then the police officer, without identifying himself as a police officer, jumped out of the car and shot 17 times to the teenagers, which were unarmed. They were not a threat. They were in a vehicle that was disabled. And unfortunately, in this incident, Jose Cruz lost his life. We have been in contact with a lot of friends, people who met him during his short life, and all what we hear are positive things about him. He was very energetic, full of life, and it's unfortunate that he lost his life in the hands of those who are supposed to protect us and look for our well-being and our safety. The police officer, Ken Johnson, was arrested a few days after the incident. He posted a bond, and then the bond was raised. Now he's wearing a monitor. He's not allowed to leave Dallas County. He was forced by the judge who is conducting the initial inquiry to surrender his all the firearms in his possession. And apparently there was a number of violations of police department policies. He was working for the Farmers Branch Police Department. Sid Fuller told the press that he was very, very clear that Officer Johnson was violating multiple policies that police officers are not authorized to conduct car chases in personal vehicles, that they are not allowed to intentionally collision vehicles to disable them, and on top of that, well, the unjustified use of lethal force was another violation, not only to department policies, but also to the Texas Penal Code, which states very clearly under which circumstances the use of lethal force is justified. In this case, it was still during daytime. There was broad light. There was no reason for him to shoot, and apparently investigators and the district attorney have a very compelling evidence, enough to basically arrest him and now start the process in which he all the evidence that they have collected, they have collected not only the materials in the scene of the crime, but they have also issued subpoenas to get access to phone records from both parties, Facebook posts, GPS data from both vehicles, and there's a lot of requests for information. All once the evidence is compiled, is going to be presented to a grand jury, which and this grand jury is going to determine whether they file criminal charges against Ken Johnson, and if that's the case, then they'll proceed with the trial. Now, for the family and friends, it's very painful. They are demanding justice. They're organizing. They have been friends of Jose, have been very supportive. And to all those who knew him, his friends, his family, I want to express our deep regret and disgust of the way this police officer conducted himself. It was unconscionable what he did. And it's going to be a long process for the family. It's going to be very painful. And I really wish for the family the best outcome possible, and that justice is served for Jose. Edgar lost a finger in the during the incident. He suffered a wound in the head. He it's out of the hospital right now, and it's on his way to recovery. But also the emotional wounds, not only losing a finger in the process, not only being assaulted by a police office, off-duty police officer, like he was, but also the emotional scars of losing a very good friend right in front of him. So it's a very sad case. We're going to be following up with the case. We're going to be giving our audience updates in how this investigation moves forward. We see so far a very strong will from part of the district attorney, at the Farmers Branch Police Department and the city, and also from the Addison Police Department. They've been very cooperative. They're very fast in their decisions and resolutions. So we are going to be following up on this case. And if you want to share your thoughts, we still have a few minutes. The number to call is 347-850-1181. That's 347-850-1181. We're talking about the unfortunate incident in which Jose Cruz lost his life in the hands of an off-duty police officer from the Farmers Branch Police Department. The, as I mentioned initially, the bond was set in $150,000, which is very low. It was the district attorney and the legal counsel for the family put a motion in order to increase that bond, increase the terms of the bond, and it was yesterday when the judge approved increasing the bond to $300,000, and the terms of him not being able to leave the county and having to surrender all the firearms in his possession, and also he was banned from establishing any contact with neither the family, witnesses, or any other person involved in the process. So that's what happened. It happened here in a suburb of Dallas, and it's another case in which a police officer shoots a young man unarmed and without justification other than being a police officer. He recharged his weapon. He shot 17 times, and it's hard to believe that someone who has sworn to protect and serve the people of Farmers Branch and the public conducts in such a manner that in which a young man, an innocent young man, loses his life. So that's our show for today. We appreciate that you join us. I want to remind you that next Monday, 5:30 Central Standard Time, we have our Spanish show. Tuesday, 5:30 Central Standard Time, we have our English show. Thank you very much for being with us today.